We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Jack Black was my hero for the longest. It still is, really.
Oh, that is.
I watched Kung Fu Panda at least 20 times.
Oh, there's a new one coming out, isn't
it? It was my first concert.
Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, they even Kung Fu Panda. Did they Kung Fu Panda live?
Yeah.
They have a band?
Anyways, that would have been good. That should be a band name. How's that not Kung Fu Panda?
Because of IP stuff, probably.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could probably get away with it. It's just a name. You know, as long as you don't use the logo.
We sell patches with Daria on them that has not gotten us in trouble yet. Mostly because no one knows who we are.
That works.
Oh, for your band?
Yeah.
But yeah, even that, it's like, just don't. Because it could be like a parody. You could get away with that stuff. And as long as, like, who owns Daria, they're not going to come after you.
Paramount owns Daria. They will definitely come after
you. Okay. And you're right about that. Especially if they're trying to do something. That's the thing. Do they care about Daria? Because if they're not making a new Daria show, they're not going to care.
She's like hardcore dancing, so she doesn't even look like Daria. Mm-hmm. You know, she's
Hello, and welcome to episode 23 of Rhythm and Wit, the podcast and video series where we discuss and explore the creative and artistic expressions of artists and performers in Oklahoma City and its neighboring cities, also known as the Greater Metro Area. My name is David Steele. I am a bass player, a music producer, a graphic designer, a photographer, and a film hobbyist. My co-host is Nicholas Campbell. Nick is a stand-up comedian, singer, songwriter, guitar player, electrical contractor, husband, father, and my best friend for over 20 years. In today's episode, we welcome a special guest, A.B. Hill. A.B. is a guitar player, a vocalist, and a stand-up comic. We wanted to have A.B. on the show to talk to him about the differences between performing music on stage and performing stand-up comedy. We also ask AB how he got started in music and what he's currently been up to with his latest project, Jawline, an emo hardcore band from Oklahoma City. We also ask AB about his tape collection and how to book shows and how to book a tour. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel and podcast feeds to keep up with new episodes that drop every Friday. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and our conversation with AB, as we greatly appreciate your time and attention. Count us off.
All right, in 5, 4.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Rhythm and Wit. My name is David Steele, and with me, as always, is...
Nick Campbell!
Today, we welcome a special guest, A.B. Hill.
Hey!
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming. A musician and a comedian, which I was saying is the apex of the show for, you know, and which is rare to find. We had James Nim, which is also, he's a drummer and a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not the first, but one of the few.
Yeah, I feel special.
So,
Before we get too far into it, I just wanted to make sure that I said what a huge mistake it was that you guys made bringing me in here. Because if you let me talk for long enough, I will say something cancelable. Something, it's just not going to be good. So just you're going to have a lot of editing.
Yeah. It's been a good run.
Yeah, no, I mean,
23 is pretty good. That's a lot of episodes.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
I don't know if you could cut around it enough.
If this is the last one, I mean...
You can keep it for later.
I don't know. Just for the
I mean, last week's episode was probably the most raciest one we've had, which wasn't bad, but it was still like who was on that?
Matt Farrell.
I mean, he's a little, you know, racier comic, so I mean that's it goes with the territory. I mean, with which is, you know, we had some good conversations about kind of where that line is in comedy, you know. I don't know. So yeah, how long have you been doing comedy? I should have asked that. I'm just curious.
I did comedy for about a year.
Yeah.
Strictly because I couldn't find anyone to play music with.
Oh, okay. You just needed to get it back on
and
stage.
And I wanted to do something.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be just a better front man in general, because I'm not super articulate or well-spoken. And I thought maybe practicing comedy could help with that. And then the second I found someone who played drums,
you're like,
I'm like, fuck this. Suck at this.
Hell yeah.
Back to hardcore.
Which, I like that, because that's a... I've always thought about that with comedy for myself, if like, or anyone that wants to be better as a speaker of any kind, comedy is a great way to practice that, I think. And it's like, you know, you're going to get a little bit more confident and more present, you know, easier to present.
What I noticed is whenever you say something, you are looking for a reaction, and I start doing that in regular conversation now, and I go, oh man, how many people have I offended before this? I know what that look is.
Yeah, yeah. Now you can recognize that look everywhere.
My mom, I said a lot of bad things. I can realize that now.
Yeah.
You know? Where I was like, oh, that wasn't funny.
Yeah. I feel like it's actually the reverse for me, getting back into music, especially hardcore music, I feel like is making me a better comedian.
Oh, okay. Oh,
cool. Rather than comedy making me a better frontman for a band.
But that's awesome that they work together in that way. I mean, in ways you don't even realize or don't intend to, I think. Like I said, because with that music and comedy, they have so many similarities, right? Like, even though they're very different, you both do them at the same places, the same in front of the same kinds of people. I mean, most people like music, also probably like comedy. You both do them on a stage in front of people with a microphone or whatever, a PA system. There's so many things that, like, how you do it is similar, but obviously they're completely different.
The product is weird.
I think of it as like comedy is more, you know, spoken and more direct, kind of, you know, speaking about thoughts, whereas music is just almost all emotion.
It's harder to subvert someone's expectations with, not impossible, but when you're a band and people know who you are, like, oh, I hope they play this song.
Right, they know
the
song.
Can't wait for them to play this song. Mm-hmm. Where when you're doing comedy, like, people expect something different every time because they don't know how comedy works.
Oh, yeah, well, that's true.
But I think, because I've talked about this recently several times, but for me, I look at a lot of comedians, especially when I get to know them more, like, it's like, oh, I've heard you do this bit before. As soon as they start it, I already start laughing because I already know what they're going to say. But, like, I like that because it's like, yeah, it's like hearing a song that you like. Your first few chords of a song, you're like, oh, hell yeah, I'm ready. You start getting in that mode.
You can cover songs.
Yeah.
Too. From other musicians, you can't cover.
Right.
Tracks.
That's a good difference.
Yeah, unless you're Carlos Mencia. Yeah.
There's a few John Wallens I would love to do live, but I can't.
Yeah. Don't we all?
Yeah, just like, this is the cover. We've talked about like swapping sets before. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I think that would be fun to just swap somebody's set, just to get a tight five and see what it looks like. Yeah.
That's kind of a way to do it, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So I guess altogether you haven't been doing comedy very long. How long have you been playing music? It's been more of a lifelong.
My first band was called Anger House.
Right.
We were in Denton, Texas. We formed in 2012.
Okay. Oh, cool. Okay. We were started a little bit earlier than that, but that we were active, around that time.
And I've been in bands since then, on and off, so...
Yeah,
over 12 years.
Cool.
Is that your craft? That's the one you'd like to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where I start. I would like to be a better comic.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of fun doing comedy. I feel like I almost have more fun doing comedy than I do playing music. Mm-hmm. I'm just not as good at it.
Yeah.
Man, you got some pretty solid jokes, though. When I first saw you, I thought you had done it before.
Oh, okay, so you saw his first ever mic.
Well, I think it was at Bricktown.
Bricktown Comedy Club was my first mic.
So we're going to Cece's. So I said, sure, great. So I hop in the truck, and my foreman Blaine's in the front seat with a handgun. Boys will be boys. But also, he's loading the magazine. Oh, God, boys will be boys. So I said, Blaine, we're going to Cece's, right? We're going to Cece's, right? He says to me, nope. Plans have changed. We're going to Lonzio's now. I said, thank fucking Christ. I guess the gun was just there in case something happened 11:13 on a Tuesday at a Lonzio's in Edmond, Oklahoma. Nothing did.
I was like, this guy's got an attitude. I like.
Which it wasn't. Technically, it wasn't his first time behind a microphone.
Though. Yeah,
that's the thing. It's like, I think that there maybe is that kind of confidence that you might have, without ever. It's like, because some people that I've seen people do comedy for the first time, and you could tell.
I was. It's like their first time. Hell, yeah. Dude. Like. Because I prepared 5 minutes of material because I thought I got 5 minutes. And when I got to the mic, like, okay, comics, you get 4 minutes each. And I'm like, I have 5 minutes. Now I have to do it really fast.
Yeah, or something. You have to figure out how to cut out something, for sure. So, and you probably, I guess, how did you go about preparing for that first show? Did you, rehearse it you would a song?
Yeah, so I just recorded myself doing it over and over and over again.
And just kind of critiqued it yourself. Yeah.
Just to make sure that everything flowed well and that I could do 5 minutes and not go over. Because I was super paranoid about the red light.
Yeah.
And then I get to my first comedy mic at Bricktown Comedy Club, and five people get red lighted and they just keep going anyways. So super punk rock about it. I kept going.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome then.
Don't go past the red light.
Right.
Yeah, that's not ideal.
But it's you're like...
But they did, though.
But you're like, I'm kind of into this punk rock shit.
So you think the stage time as a musician gave you some comfortability with,
being in front of a crowd in general. I mean...
Yeah. That part of the nerves is cut down a little bit. Like you said, you're still nervous about...
Right, it's a different kind of crowd, It's not the same. I'm not playing to, punk rockers with a guitar. When you're playing music, you have this sonic boundary in front of you that's protecting you.
Right.
And I could yell and scream about all the things that are making me upset.
Yeah, and you're not
kind of... I'm comfortable where when you're doing comedy, the sonic boundary is gone. It is just you and the words that you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no other noises going on, I guess.
Because you can kind of muffle and hide behind the music.
And if people can't understand what I'm saying when I'm playing hardcore, it's not that as big of a deal.
Yeah.
Where when you're doing a podcast or you're doing a stand-up, it's better to be articulate so people... get the joke,
right?
Because if they don't understand what you're saying, then it's not funny.
Yeah, that's the whole point. And so, like I said, I think going back to that music, it's like you're just conveying an emotion instead of an idea. I think that's the key
that
difference.
Jargled screaming sounded really angry.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I always think of it like this too. It's like whenever you're a musician and nobody shows up, and you still have to play for 30 to 40 minutes. You know what I'm saying? You're like. That's how I feel whenever I'm up on the stage and there's four people. I'm still like, oh, there's four people.
Well, here at JJ's Alley and there's the usual comics and people just there to drink had no idea that comedy was happening that night.
Yeah, those are good times.
And they're having a conversation because they don't give a fuck.
Yeah, they're from out of town and they're usually wearing cowboy hats.
What are these jackoffs doing up there?
It's interesting. I mean, that is a big key difference too, is the audience. Like you said, I mean, I always think about this now with comedy. like comedy, the crowd has to be there for comedy or it just doesn't really work. I mean, with music, I mean, if you're at a bar at JJ's, that's why at JJ's music works perfectly all the time, because there's just a guitar player in the corner playing and people can just go about their business.
It's ambient.
Yeah, and they can listen, but they can have a conversation. You can't do that with comedy.
Comedy's not ambient.
Yeah.
Someone's going to say like a racial slur or something and it's just going to ruin your night.
Right, yeah, and then you don't want to be, because if people are being offensive at all on stage, that people will make people want to leave. They don't want to hear, you know, what that comic is saying.
And that's how you lose a mic.
Exactly. Yeah.
That happens sometimes.
Yeah, so you have to be careful. That's why I think that's a big thing with people. I mean, and for people out there putting on shows, you know, I've noticed it's like, be careful with where you do book shows and make sure that you don't do an ambush show.
What's even worse is you go to a mic and someone's there on a date and they didn't know what was happening. Yeah. And they're like, oh, I'm going to do this to impress my date.
Yeah.
And they've seen like maybe like a couple of Joe Rogans and then they get up there and they think they can do it.
And, that could be entertaining.
Did that happen to you? Was that
particularly, I'm referencing a thing that I was not there to see and only heard about.
Yeah.
You might have been there because I think it happened at JJ's and a different comic got egged or hassled by somebody and they said, well, why don't you get up here and do it? And then they did and it just did not go well. I'm trying to think of who was telling me that fucking story. I haven't seen them perform in a long time and I can't remember their name and this is going to really upset them. The White Jesus.
Jesus?
Jesus Flores.
Okay. I forgot about him, man. Did he say come up and try it?
I think he was the person that was
egging the dude.
Yeah.
Not the antagonist, but the dude was like, he was the person getting heckled. And then the dude that got on after him was really bad. And I think from what I understand, also an undercover cop that immediately blew his cover. If he was one to begin with.
We'll never.
He said that he was. That's the first thing that you do when you're an undercover cop is announce that you're an undercover cop.
Right.
Or it's really a great ploy.
He's a really bad one.
Yeah. Or he's smart because like, nobody believes him.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
And it's for the bit.
Yeah.
You know?
That would be it. Yeah, anyways.
I'll write that down. I'll use it later.
So, yeah, so you've been playing music for a long time, I guess, your first band, Anger House, in Texas. Where did we drop off on that?
Oh, yeah, what was that show like?
Yeah.
My first show ever?
Yeah.
Oh, my first show ever with my first band ever, Anger House.
Yeah.
Was at a place called Eureka Park in Denton, Texas.
Ooh.
And we did not have a permit.
Oh, okay. Like,
but the promoters, I guess, they went to Home Depot, they rented a generator.
Okay.
Somebody had a PA system that kind of worked.
Good enough.
There was like six punk bands. We were just in the middle of this field.
Oh, nice.
There was like a youth soccer game down the way.
Yeah.
And we just played. Little mosh pit.
Yeah.
A lot of young Dentonites.
A lot of kids came out.
Showed up. It was a lot of fun. No one hassled us. In fact, we even did it again.
Okay.
The second time, we were smart enough to not do it in the grass. We found a tennis court that was not being used at the time and did it there. People did show up to play tennis. They kind of just played around us. Did not seem to mind at all. Denton used to be really cool like that.
That's what I've heard. I've been through it, I guess, because it's right on the way to Dallas, so how could you know? But, like, I've never been there for music or anything, but I know that they used to be... I mean, I guess it probably still is. It's a college town, right? So it's probably a lot of music.
Denton is...
Still going
had a
on.
Lull for a while,
right.
And it came right back up to the point where like national touring acts are coming through to play Denton.
Yeah, specifically because they used to have a thing. It was Denton Radio. I think it was like a radio, but it was they had a website too. I think, but it was very, very. They were like, I guess it's not active anymore, but it was like huge for people, like people getting on it, would it was very popular because of the people they would get, and with that scene, it was very.
Yeah. When I was participating with that scene, it was very DIY.
Yeah.
It was house shows.
Which that's awesome. And, I mean, that just reminds me of like doing what I do a lot here. With doing our house shows, it's like, man, if you can't get anybody to give you an opportunity, just make it yourself, you know?
Yeah.
So that sounds awesome that you guys did that.
It really grew from that.
Yeah. So and that's kind of, yeah, you've always done that kind of DIY stuff. Yeah.
A lot depending on who you ask, maybe for the worse, maybe for the better. Because now it's looking at it from the outside, now that I live here,
right?
It's huge now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm seeing, like, really big bands come through to play at Rubber Gloves, which used to be, like, a hole in the wall, and now it's renovated and fancy. And again, depending on who you ask, great. Great for the scene, great for the music. If you ask someone else, it's kind of lame.
Yeah, exactly. Like, as far as, like, oh, it's not what it was.
The spirit is...
yeah.
For some people, the spirit is gone.
I mean, that's... Yeah, that
happens.
For
some people, great business move.
Right. I mean, that kind of happens. I mean, you see that here, too. I mean, I won't, name any names, but, like, as far as places that used to be really cool, and then they get a lot of money, and then they completely renovate it, and you're like, what? This doesn't feel the same anymore for some reason. I don't know, but it happens. I think that that's... part of it, I think, as far as
and just to cover my own ass, just in case I get asked to play Ditten again.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care what they do.
Right.
Like, if shows are happening, good thing.
No, yeah, like I said, I think it's good for and it's because it's so close to here. I think it's like, for, you know, for us, it's like I could shoot down there with
two
a band
hours.
And like play a show and have a good crowd, you know. Whereas that's what sucks about Oklahoma. I'm not ashamed to say that on the podcast. It's like, I think Oklahoma City music scene is terrible, and I think it's, you know, needs some kind of revitalization and people to care about it to help grow and get to something like, because we could be like Denton, why not? You know, there's plenty of creative people here. They're just not.
It depends on where you go, and it depends on who you ask, because we do have venues that are popping off right now. The Sanctuary.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
one, crazy shows.
Yeah, that's a...
all the time, like, popping off. I don't... Because you primarily play, like, indie rock music.
Yeah.
And that's not a scene that I participate in a lot, so I don't know...
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe that's having a role right now, but...
The Sanctuary is one that I've heard a lot about. I haven't never been there, but it is a part of that... It's more of that heavier music and more of that heavier punk and stuff like that.
Yeah, heavier punk and hardcore.
Yeah.
89th Street has bands that come through, and they're getting more. I'm seeing it uptick. They're getting more shows to come through 89th. There's a newer venue called the Resonant Head, which I think might play more to the indie rock scene.
That's kind of a combination, I think, as far as... But they do have a lot of more of that. I still haven't been there yet, but they've had a lot of good shows and continuing to have... a lot of kind of touring, but they do a lot of local support. Like, they always get good local support.
Yeah,
so I mean,
Resonant Head.
And that's something that a lot of other venues don't do a lot of. I think 89th Street certainly does, but I feel like that, like I said, that's the style that they kind of target. It's harder for some bands to even get in there. I mean, if you're not a specific style of music.
Yeah.
So what are you doing for booking then? Like, how do you book your band? Like, do you go to Denton, or are you just within the Midwest?
So we booked a tour in October. And we started the process about 6 months prior.
Okay, yeah.
Which, in my touring experience in the past, is more than enough time.
Yeah.
But... yeah. Things seem to have gotten so saturated that some places that we were trying to like book at, which would have been reasonably easy for like a small time band that's never toured before to book at, were like, oh yeah, we would love to have you guys, but that spot is gone. We were booked out for at least 8 months.
Okay.
And I'm like, we should have started earlier.
Yeah.
But it's just sending constant emails and constantly being rejected, and eventually someone emails you back with a spot that you can play, and sometimes they'll ask you to book the rest of the bands for them. Sometimes if you're lucky, they're like, hey, we have a show ready for you. We have a show that you can just jump on,
right? That's
that does not have a touring band on it yet,
right?
And you eventually get it together and you pull the gun out of your mouth and everything works out.
Yeah.
Until you're like, you get finally to Lexington, Kentucky, and there's nobody there.
Right.
And no one even knew that there was supposed to be a show. Mm. And they find somebody to do sound from the bar.
And somebody come handle this.
Turn some knobs. Like, this one makes this louder. And then
yeah. You're like, you know how to turn it on? Okay, we got it from here.
How'd the show go, though?
That show in Lexington, Kentucky was fucking miserable.
Yeah.
I wish Blake was here with me,
because
he's the one that got that show booked together, and I felt like it was a real punch in the fucking gut for him, because when we got there, someone had hand-drawn with Sharpie a sign that said, Jawline, plus this band and this band.
Yeah.
And they slapped it on the front door of the venue. And the bands that were playing all had the same members.
Oh, shit.
And when you're doing DIY touring, you put the touring band in the middle.
Yeah.
Because that usually guarantees them the most exposure when they're a small-time band. So they get on, they get off, we get on, we play, we get off. And then they just kind of get back on.
Yeah, the same guys. What? That's weird.
So the audience that we were playing to, which was that band.
Yeah. Which happens. But, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes those shows, I always say this, I think it goes for comedy too, but, I mean, there's probably something you could take away. Hopefully with that one, like a relationship, like you made a friend with somebody there or something. You know what I mean? Like, if you do go back, you might have something a little... extra foot in the door.
That's wishful thinking, but we definitely didn't. Yeah. If anything, we probably closed the door.
Right.
We bitched and complained about it the whole entire time.
But, you know, there
is a door that needed closing.
The guy that they got to do sound for us did follow us on our Instagram, so there was that.
Yeah, you got somebody that may be interested. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. The shows that followed were amazing.
Yeah.
After that.
And
how many did you have on that tour?
Yeah.
We had five booked. The first show fell through because the promoter couldn't make it. And he told us, like, the day of. Nice. So we just stayed in Oklahoma City an extra day and then left later. Which sucks, because that was a show in between. So we were playing the second show. The show after that was Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay. You gotta drive.
So we had a show between that was going to kind of split that drive up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then we no longer had that. So we just drove straight to Madison, Wisconsin, which was about 14 hours.
Oh. And what did you drive in?
So our drummer has a Toyota RAV4, like a 2018 RAV4. Nice, reliable, and we rented a trailer from U-Haul.
Oh, nice.
Which
was
the most cost-effective way to do it.
Yeah. How much would you say that you ended up spending through the whole thing?
We probably broke even.
Nice.
Yeah,
which is good. Usually you lose a lot of money when you're touring as a young band.
Yeah.
We probably about broke even, because with the money we made, he was able to pay for the trailer and most of the gas.
Nice.
That's killer.
Yeah, so, that's not counting, like, us buying our own food and shit.
Yeah.
And we stayed in one hotel.
Yeah.
And the rest of the time, we were fortunate enough to have been put up places.
Yeah, that's always good about, as far as people, if you can manage that, that's the best way.
Well, what did you, how long was the run? So,
find out. I will tell you. I remember I wrote it down and I posted it so other people can go and look at it and know where that we were playing.
It was in October.
October. It was early October. Here it is. October 2nd, the kickoff show we played here. October 3rd, we were supposed to play in Wichita. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
October 4th, we drove straight to Madison, Wisconsin. Great show in Madison, Wisconsin with our friends in a band called Caryatids. Cool town. So cool. So nice that I started looking at properties to rent.
Yeah.
Oh,
nice.
And it was way too expensive for me.
Wisconsin, though.
It was,
that'd be
it was
fun.
Nice, that's, college town.
That's like East Coast or East,
far, kind of a little east. Just like north of Chicago a little bit.
Yeah.
Super nice town. Super great vibe. A real safe space for people of the LGBT community, as I am. And unfortunately, also prices them out from ever living there.
Right. Sounds like San Francisco or something, too.
Yeah. Like, hey, man, we're great and we're accepting. Too bad you can't fucking afford to live here. after that was the Lexington show, which was, as I mentioned a minute ago, a disaster. October 6th, we played in Ravenswood, West Virginia, which is 10 minutes from my hometown of Ripley, West Virginia.
Oh, nice.
Which has a very small but very fun hardcore scene with really cool hardcore bands. A lot of young kids came out. Great show. Mm-hmm. The basement of an abandoned church.
Oh, nice.
That now just rents just out like, that space.
That just sounds cool.
Yeah, Our Savior church. Lutheran Church.
Yeah.
Which I think no longer has services, but will let punk bands play, which is awesome. And then we played at Grove Fest in St. Louis, Missouri at a bar called Platypus, which was like the coolest setup for a bar that I've ever seen. And I wish more bars that host bands would build it like this, because they had the bar. Then in the middle, they had an arcade with like restaurant seating. And then in a separate room, they had the show, like the showroom, which was really nice because you don't have to deal with like, as a bartender or server, a crowd of like punk kids moshing while you're trying to do your job, and vice versa. Yeah. Or they do comedy there, because I saw the flyers.
Oh, nice.
You don't have to have your comedy open mic at the bar where people don't know that it's happening, that are talking over the fucking performers. It's in a separate room. It's just so nice. Have it in a... This is all to say, have your shit in a separate room.
That's a good idea.
They can leave to get the drinks. They don't have to, like...
Because that's like, I mean, that's what Matt was saying last week, too, is about he travels all over and does comedy all over the place, too, and been to many venues, but... Like, he was saying something about he hates it whenever the bar is in the same room as the show.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like an annoyance, usually.
Yeah, because you can't control what's coming out of that.
You know? For sure. But it goes for music as well. I mean, I think music is not as a big of a problem, but comedy, definitely.
Yeah. So, music, I can definitely be louder than whoever's talking about their fucking... job that day or whatever conversation they have is more important than the art that's happening.
So what how many tours have you booked to put together and been on? I mean,
yeah,
with Jawline or in general?
Oh, yeah,
just
ever.
In general, I mean, and Jawline,
like five or six, I don't know.
Usually pretty
big jobs. My first couple of bands never got to tour. They all lasted about a year and then broke up. Record an EP, break up.
That's how it goes.
This is the bands I had in the middle of my time doing music. Have had the opportunity to tour. I've gotten to see a lot of cool places.
Yeah, I was gonna say, where's like, I guess, where all have you been? I guess in the different regions and stuff, with different tours. Have you been to like different places, or you go back to the same regions usually?
I've been through all the over. Midwest every time.
Mostly, okay.
I have had the opportunity to go east or west coast, but that will change with this band, unfortunately.
Well, how long were you together before you recorded that album?
A few months.
Really?
Yeah.
Dude, that is a killer album.
Oh, thank you.
I love it. It reminds me of like Fugazi like Baroness. You ever listen to Baroness?
I'm not super familiar with Baroness. Fugazi is a really big influence of mine. Yeah. Our drummer also really likes Fugazi.
Hell yeah.
It's done well.
Our bass player doesn't dislike Fugazi, but I think it's more of an acquired taste for him.
Yeah.
We all have an eclectic kind of palette of music.
Different
and
tastes.
They kind of intersect and diverge at different places, and that kind of is what makes our sound what it is.
I always love that about music. That's my favorite thing about it, is you could do something by yourself, like if you're a guitar player and a singer, and even if you can play every instrument, right, and you record an album all by yourself, you can do it. But it's not going to be the same thing as if you got together with four other people and each person has their own part of, you know, what you create. And so it's like, and it each comes from different experiences and different tastes.
That is incredibly important, yeah. Because if it was just me and I had, yeah. It's like, I had full reign of the sound, mm-hmm. People would be like, hey, that kind of sounds like Fugazi.
Yeah, but it would just be exactly whatever
because
it
I
is.
Have Blake as a co-writer, yeah. It sounds Bounce, something yeah. like something different, oh, something yeah. special, where you, so, kinda, you can kind of be like, hey, I can kind of hear some Fugazi in that, but also right. I can hear a little Alkaline Trio, mm-hmm. and I can hear yeah. a little bit of hardcore, and a little bit of pop punk, and a little cool. bit of emo.
Yeah,
yeah, so, that hit me in the right spot. Yeah. Have you ever heard of Japan Droids?
Yeah, I'm familiar with
that. Yeah, it kind of got that vibe.
Yeah,
in
I like that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But Hoppus, that's like my favorite song. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Is it like Mark Hoppus reference?
Yeah, so Blake has had that bass riff for, I guess he's had that riff like for a little while, and he's wanted to. Blake uses this term. He's like, I need to burn this.
Oh, like,
which I guess means he needs to put, he needs to get this yeah, out, he needs to put yeah. it in something. He's had that riff to burn for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And Blake is a big fan of Mark Hoppus as a bass player.
Okay.
And I think it was heavily influenced by how Mark Hoppus plays bass.
Okay.
Oh, that's killer, dude. Yeah. yeah.
So yeah, it was a kind of an inspiration for yeah. it in a lot of ways. That's awesome.
A song that we will probably record again because he does it, not the bass part differently necessarily, but he sings it different now, so.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Dude, I love the bouncing back and forth with the vocals, too.
Cool.
That's really great.
Also, Blake's idea is like, hey, we need to have some call and response in this.
Yeah. Like yeah. So how long have you guys been, is that whenever you guys started the band, when you met, or have you guys known each other?
I've known Blake for like 10 years.
Yeah.
We've never had the opportunity to be in a band together. Okay. We've always been in different bands.
Right.
Blake moved to Oklahoma City, or Norman, rather,
mm-hmm.
about a year, maybe 2 years before I moved here.
Okay.
And I didn't even know that he was living here.
Mm.
I just texted him one day. I'm like, hey, man, I'm going through some shit.
Yeah.
And I'm moving to Oklahoma City. He's like, hey, dude, I live in Norman.
Weird.
And I'm like, I didn't fucking know that you've... I haven't talked to him in a long time, so...
Yeah, it was just a random... That's awesome. That's like... It seems like it's one of those things that was just perfectly... It was supposed to happen.
Yeah, it was very serendipitous.
Yeah, yeah. Man, I love that. I love seeing that. I've been noticing it a lot more. Well, I guess whenever you kind of look for that, I don't know, but it happens. And I think it's a part of, if you hadn't texted him, if you hadn't made the choice to reach out to your friend and say what's going on, that wouldn't have happened. You know, it's
right.
like I think a lot of people stop themselves from even getting to that point, and then that those kinds of opportunities won't appear if you don't put yourself into any, you know, out of yourself into the world.
Yeah.
Dude, check in on your homies, dude. Even
yeah.
even if like life has taken you to like different places.
Right.
And you've diverged.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
If I you mean, think about them,
just say hey.
Get in their DMs.
Like, yeah, that's a good
yeah.
That's a good way to think about that. Cuz have you ever done that where you're like, "Man, I need to call this person," and they call you?
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, where you're like, "Oh, that's kind of."
Yeah.
I usually if I think of somebody, it's like, "Let me stop.
Yeah,
say what's up.
Say,
hey,
yeah.
dad."
Cuz I think that that's something telling you, maybe your body or something even deeper telling you to or something.
Yeah.
It's like I think that when a thought appears, right? It's like, oh, I'm just thinking about Nick for no reason, just randomly.
Yeah, I know you are. Sex. I know you're thinking about
Hey, Dad, did you get those spokes yeah, yet? Or
miss you. But, well, yeah, man, I was very impressed. I mean, you sent me the album, I think, whenever we first met. And I was just, and I'm a big, like I said, like an old emo guy. So, like, it hit the spot, like old piebald.
Love Piebald.
Do you really?
That's like my favorite. I don't meet a lot of people that know about Piebald.
Yeah.
I love Piebald.
Yeah, dude. Oh, that was. I found that on mp3.com back in the
did
day.
You,
man.
Didn't you see them?
I met them.
Yeah,
I was 16. I hugged them.
I remember you having a picture or something.
Yeah, dude. I was like nervous. I was like sweating.
So I grew up like in like Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio area.
Yeah.
And I think Piebald is like from Delaware or something like that, or maybe Maryland.
They're from Boston.
They're from Boston?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, just like...
But they were road dogs. They would...
Yeah.
Yeah, they were... Remember they traveled in their biodiesel van? And like, it would break down all the time. I missed them twice because
that's
of that.
Wicked. Yeah, like that... Like, a lot of like my older family at the time loved Piebald.
Yeah.
And... By virtue of that, like I was introduced to like Piebald, a band that I probably never would have heard of otherwise.
I just happened upon them, but then they were like, and the best thing is Travis Shettle is such a nice dude. You ever follow him on Instagram?
No,
you can send him money and he'll write you a song.
Really?
Yeah, is that true? He'll do jingles and stuff. Oh, nice. Yeah, and so I was thinking about just doing it for my business, my Nick Campbell comedy, or I'm sorry, Nick Campbell's on Electric.
Which business? Which business?
No, that's a better idea. You should, if someone sends you money, you should write them a joke.
Ooh, I like that.
That's pretty good.
Don't take my idea. That's a good idea. I'll write you a joke.
Honestly,
it's like a cameo, but.
Yeah,
maybe more offensive.
It's going to be. It costs more for
you
offensive.
You could offer people to leave their voicemail message. That's a good thing for celebrities, for sure. But
write
a comedian.
People's letters of resignation.
That's pretty good. That's a good one.
As per the desk of Nick Campbell.
Dictated but not read.
AB says, fuck y'all bitches. So you're kind of an up and coming band. I feel like, I mean, like I said, it seems like you're
pretty new, but already going
doing a lot. Man. How do you balance the like real life stuff with music life? Like having to go on tour. Do you have a job that kind of? Do you have a family that you got to kind of keep an eye out for? Or?
I have no kids. Mm-hmm. I'm 32 and childless.
Beautiful.
I have a really chill job. So I work in an auto shop. It's a pretty big shop. I get decent health care. I get time off.
So yeah, you know, all that stuff is maintained, and you can focus the rest of your time on music.
If I give them like a month's notice, I could be gone for a week and not have to worry about it.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah,
that's good to have, because it's like a lot of people I know have a hard time taking vacation to go on tour or whatever.
Musicians are notoriously working class, and notoriously work, I don't know if notoriously is the right verbiage, but they all work in the service industry where it's nearly fucking impossible to,
to
leave for a couple of weeks and then come back and still have a job, because they'll just replace you like that,
which that kind of sucks. It makes sense, I guess. They need to keep people on staff too, but it's, I don't know, because comedians obviously are similar, working in restaurants and doing that stuff, so. But it's a little bit easier.
Your Wendy's,
I guess,
can wait for a fucking 10 days, okay? Like, go to a different Wendy's.
But that's good, though. It seems like you have a good job and a good setup to be able to be creative and do these things and put time into what you're working on, whether it's comedy or music. So that's tough. It's a rare thing to find. I mean, I'm similar. I'm 37 and childless, or almost 37. So it's like, you know, and I think that not having kids for this long, it's like, man, it's like, I don't know. I think I'm trying to do what I can for my community and the people around me, whereas, like, so many people have children and families to dedicate their time on, where it's like, I got so much time, man. What do I do with it to be productive, you know?
That's good, though. Like, it is good to, like, especially as an artist, like, to use that to do something for your community.
Right, if you can. I mean, like I said, if you don't have other things that are taking up your time, like kids or family or whoever it is that you have to worry about. But, I mean, even creating art, I think, to me, is taking care of the community, too, because you're providing something for people. Like, these young kids that come out and see you guys, they need something to do that's hopefully not drugs or violence and crime, but it's like go and watch music and watch, you know, art.
Do your drugs and violence and crime there.
That's at least it's
hardcore.
Got it in one spot.
No, but you know, keeping
hardcore
people,
has this unique thing where like they want to. I'm not going to say in every hardcore circle, but in a lot of hardcore circles, they want to push out the drugs. They want to push out racism and just like undesirable shit like that. They want a healthy, clean community. And hardcore does shit for the community besides just providing an outlet and an art form. We do this thing, like, for example, there is Backroom Productions books most of the real hardcore that comes through Oklahoma City, and they do a lot not just for those bands and those artists, but they do a lot for their community because they book all their shows at the local VFW hall, about 5 minutes from where I live on the south side of Oklahoma City. Lots of homeless live on the south side. They kind of get pushed there by the city, I think. So last big freeze, you know, that, that Arctic plunge we had where it got into the single digits. They had a really big show.
Yeah.
Line around the door. Peeling Flesh, I think, was headlining, and they're huge in hardcore. And they had a coat drive. They had a young lady, I'm blanking on her name. I'm going to look it up real quick. Yeah, but she was there to provide a coat drive so they can round up just some kind of winter protection for people that would otherwise die in that weather.
Yeah, they need something. They need, you know.
And they did a thing where, like, hey, this lady's going to be here for a coat drive. If you bring a lightly used or new coat, we're going to give you a free ticket to a future Backrooms VFW show.
Yeah, and they're taking care of people.
Yeah. That's all to say that like, your community comes out and supports your art, so you take care of your community in turn.
Yeah. Well, do you, so what do you, what's the plans with Jawline? Like, how, where you, what, you going next? What's the future? You trying to hit big? You want to get famous? You know?
I'm just trying to have fun, dude. I mean, if I can make it a career and that happens, that is fantastic.
But
that's not my end goal.
You're otherwise,
I can't speak for the whole band, but my end goal is to make the most authentic and genuine music that I can as an expression of myself, and to have fun while I am doing it. And to play some shows, and to get some kids into some good music.
Yeah, and share what you love about
me. And to get fucking laid.
Yeah. Of course, that's why we all do.
Why else would you play guitar?
That's how I got my wife.
Did it work for you?
Yeah, it did.
What am I doing wrong?
She stalked me. Yeah. Oh, I meant to give you something. I forgot. You. AB. So I know that you're into cassettes.
I like tapes, yeah.
And I got you this one right here. This is the Wicked Shimmies.
Oh, nice.
Wicked Shimmies, okay.
It's an old band we used to work with back in the day. My kids broke the case. Yeah, dude. It's a killer one. but yeah, we knew the guy.
Chuck Ivy.
I met him whenever he was working on a job with my dad.
I love these track names. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Have you ever heard of the old band Debris?
Not familiar.
Or what was it, Thunderpunk?
That's the only one I remember is Debris, but
yeah,
I touched myself. Great track name.
But they're like old school punk.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
I can tell from the track names this is old school punk.
But yeah, give it a listen, man. I thought you might enjoy it. That's yours.
Yeah. Well, speaking of cassettes, you're a cassette collector, do you put out cassettes for your music?
Yeah. So our last album was put out on cassette.
Thing, it's an interesting thing that's coming back.
Yeah, cassettes are coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can get them at like Dig It and the Plaza, and you can get them at like the record store. Guest Room Records sells cassettes.
Our last
local
EP
cassettes.
Demo, I think we still have copies available at Dig It.
Yeah.
Where's Dig It?
Plaza.
Yeah, Plaza.
It's like a little shop over by Lyric Theater or whatever.
Okay.
Somewhere down there. It's a cool little place. But they do, because Jarvix has a whole booth in there for Weirder, Make Oklahoma Weirder, and his cassettes. They love the cassettes. I don't know. I guess that's something. But it's cool because you can have physical media still. You can't do CDs. Nobody does CDs anymore. Like, so what do you give away, or how do you sell things at shows?
I know some
music,
really young...
Yeah,
we have like a young fan who collects CDs.
Yeah, so that will come back eventually.
I think we're like, they're like, the next generation has gotten to a point where they're getting into music, and CDs have been far enough removed.
Right,
they're old enough now that it's kind of like vinyl again. Like, hey, this is kind of neat.
But the thing about CDs is it's not any. There's nothing good about CDs actually.
They don't sound. sounds better.
It sounds terrible. It sounds worse than streaming.
Yeah, compressed.
So like, it's not, they're awful, and they should be forgotten.
But it's old now. They're old now,
therefore
they're getting cool again.
I mean, I remember when CDs were a thing. I remember I had cassettes when I was a little kid, right? Like maybe 10 or something, and you had cassettes. Was my first music was on cassettes, and then CDs became popular. but it's like they're cool, right? Because it's a disc and it's like, you know, it's like shiny. I don't know.
It's spinning in your pocket.
Right. It's just a cool thing, but magic. They're terrible otherwise.
Are these, what's the quality of a cassette tape?
Well, but it's like magnetic. I mean, it's different. Yeah. It has a quality to
it. It's warmer. Yeah. It's kind of like vinyl where it's a little warmer.
It's a little bit different.
Yeah. There's some gray to it. CD just makes it nice and sweet. Yeah.
Because vinyl is cool. I've been getting into that a little bit more. I mean, I have a collection of vinyl. I don't ever listen to them because it's annoying. I don't want to get them out.
It's a fucking huge pain in the ass.
You have to get up every fucking 30 minutes and flip the fucking thing.
You don't buy records to listen to them because you just stream everything. You buy records when you have a fucking date over.
Yeah, exactly. You pull out your records.
This is the 1982 person of Minor Threats.
Yeah, let's do it all the time. Never, like once a year.
And they're always super impressed by that.
Yeah,
it works every time.
But,
I don't think
but there is something very cool about the records and vinyl. I mean, it's a different, especially if you have a nice setup for it, listen to that stuff. But same with cassettes. So, yeah, I just wanted to ask about that because it's definitely a thing that's coming around. More and more people are into
it. How much do you sell them for? How much do you sell your cassettes for?
The cassettes are sold out, but they went for $10.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really good. Really good.
We are actually in the studio right now. Mm-hmm. Shout out Riff Room Recordings. Unless I say something inflammatory, in which case, it's not coming out anymore. No, we're recording. We're recording. I think we're shooting for 9 songs. We're still writing some of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We've recorded half of it. And then our drummer's baby came 2 weeks early, so we stopped recording the rest of it.
you thought you had that extra 2 weeks.
We got 2 more weeks to get this done. We're going to have it, and then we can go on our break. And you can take care of your baby and get that sorted out. Baby came early. What would have probably come out late this month, early next month, is probably going to come out in April now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, you have a little bit more time to kind of promote it to you. And
And we've definitely, the writing is... We've definitely outdone the last one. Mm-hmm. When it does finally come out, we've kind of come into more of our own sound, and we're not that we're unhappy with the last EP, we're just more happy with this one.
Right.
Yeah. Well, what's your process? Mm-hmm. What's your writing process? I mean, it seems like you guys are able to kick out some stuff.
We go about it different ways. Sometimes I will have a whole song ready. Mm-hmm. And I will bring it to the guys and I'll be like, this is kind of what I have laid out. Add yourselves to this. Sometimes one of us will just have a riff and we're like, hey, I have this really good riff and we need to build around it, and we'll just sit there and jam on it and kind of build it from there. And then sometimes John, our drummer, will have an idea where he'll be like, hey, we could pause right here.
Yeah.
And or we could do this or that.
Kind of add dynamics and things like that.
The dynamics from Jawline all come from the rhythm.
Yeah.
Because I'm a shitty guitar player. I need them to give me a bed to be a shitty guitar player and make the rest of the music.
Are you... how many members are there? Is this
the three?
Nice. So, yeah, so you're the only guitar player, so you have to do a lot in that instance. Which are trying to cover a lead and rhythm guitar.
Blake's really good at playing... thicker bass parts and even bass chords sometimes.
So he does kind of a rhythm guitar section.
And sometimes Blake almost plays leads as a bass player. He'll add really interesting and really
melodic
bass lines.
That's the idea. I mean,
I think play more of a rhythm.
Whenever we used to play together, we were a three piece in our first band, Aliens vs. Robots, and it was. Interesting for me as a bass player, and it pushed me, I think, at that time to be the lead guitar player on a bass in a lot of cases. But I love that as far as pushing the bass, and because that's my thing. I hate bass as just the rhythm instrument it is, as far as like keeping eighth notes or whatever. It's like that's the worst bass to me, you know, unless it's a cool punk riff, it's just super heavy, you know. I mean, that there is cool stuff you can do with it, but. I like pushing it into a, you know, more of a melodic instrument, and while also playing with rhythms. But I've always loved that about that instrument in general, but specifically, yeah, playing. Nick was a guitar player for us, and he had to do a rhythm and lead and kind of balance that and sing.
I feel like you get better because you're like, I got to cover more space. Yeah. And then whenever you get with a four piece, you're like, how do I tone this down? I'm stepping on too many people's toes. Right. Yeah.
But well, that's how I found out. That's how I was. Stall and Cable, your band. That's how I was introduced. Because Stall, you were opening for them as a comic.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Which I think is a stellar idea.
Yeah.
I think there should be more punk shows that have comics that play in between the bands.
Right, yeah. That'd be cool for punk. I mean, specifically, I think that would... I mean, they'd appreciate that. I don't know. It's like, I feel like a lot of the punk crowds maybe don't get out to a lot of comedy shows. Or, I don't know.
Because there's a lot of comedians out there, bigger comedians that are into punk and hardcore. Right. Ian Fidance.
Yeah.
Huge hardcore fan. I just saw Kyle Kinane at Bricktown Comedy Club.
Yeah.
Really big fan.
Yeah. So it's like there is a crossover.
There's a crossover,
for sure. So, I mean, that's something that we talk about a lot and we want to do with the show. Obviously, you know, music and comedy, but having a real show, like a variety show type show, and have bands and comedians and do things and like just have a real show with, you know, an audience, but also film it and do all that.
Because if you get the right bands out to that, you're going to get fans of music that don't necessarily follow comedy.
Yeah, and you're going
to exposed to some, you know, comedians that are local to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of, I mean, there's no reason why, you know, there, like I said, a lot of people like music probably like comedy. It's like there is a lot of crossover between the audience, but I think that a lot of people don't even know about the comedy scene. If you're in the music scene, it's like, what? There's comedians here too? You know, it's like, I think we just don't know about each other a lot of the time.
Well, next time you book a show.
Yeah.
I got you, baby.
I have that idea kicking around, so if it ever comes to fruition.
Well, I think we're going to try a variety show somewhere.
Yeah, that's what I said. And we'd love to have a different acts too have a true variety show.
That
different
would be
genres.
Really good. Yeah.
Like hip hop, have some hip hop, have some hardcore, have some rock, whatever. Yeah. That'd be cool.
That'd be dope.
Why not, you know? I don't know. Especially if you bill it like that and say, this is a variety of music. And
come get it.
Yeah.
I got Brandon Killo to agree to let Jawline, because, you know, he did the McKindles for a long time, I think he moved them to a different place, and I haven't been to that place yet.
It's a good spot,
But where he would have a musical guest that would play, like, a song in between.
Oh, okay.
And I said, hey, we play heavy music, but would you let us try? And he was totally into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it hasn't happened yet.
But then Kindle's closed, so that was probably another thing, right?
Well, they still do music up there. At
Kindle's?
The Kilo Comedy Show.
OK Culture.
Yeah. Yeah. Over there by...
but that one seems like he's not being as consistent lately with it, so hopefully it'll pick up and you can maybe do it again.
Yeah. It's a good open mic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially because he does that. He'll, like, bring people in and out with music and stuff.
I didn't know that. I guess I should have, but I had never been to that open mic at all, or any of his mics. So, I didn't know he had... Because that's a good idea. So he has, like, a band on stage the whole time, and you have a little bit of music at the beginning or something, and then have the comedians and then music in between.
Because
the setup is already there. It's like, why not?
And then they'll do like hip hop, so they'll plug right into the PA.
That's basically what we did. We had a house show here, not this most recent one, but in the summer, last summer, when you weren't there, right? Because you were out of town. You had another show. Anyways.
Yeah, that's what makes it more difficult, because when you have a hip hop artist, they have their music.
Yeah.
Usually like on a thumb drive or something. Mm-hmm. They just upload that, they plug into the PA, they're ready to go. I have like a Marshall stack and shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Like drums that we have to...
Yeah, it's a lot more setup.
Just a huge hindrance and just a big pain in the ass to anyone else. But
you can get it up, set it up beforehand.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's not that big of a deal, I think. If you have the space for it and like a stage for it, for sure. Because like I said, with that show here, my band Stolen Cable did 3 sets. Right, like, because we were playing everything, because it was our last show before Josh left until you went to Japan, and like, so we played the first set. Now we had somebody come up, I think first, and then do comedy, and then we played a set, and then had a comedian, then we did another set, and then had a comedian, and then we did, so it was all us the whole time, just getting, taking a break and having comedy. But it worked out, but I think sometimes that could be an issue with switching between the two.
Yeah. Once you do music, comedy's not as cool as
music.
That's
what Matt was telling me last week. It's...
Comedy is way harder, though, man. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, it's so, it is. Like, it's just, it's so fucking hard. You know, when you're playing music and you're kind of bombing, you don't really know that you're bombing.
Yeah.
Unless you're really bombing.
Yeah, unless you, yeah.
Like, you know immediately as a comic that you're bombing.
Very exposed. Yeah. Like you said, there's that wall, that barrier of sound
or something.
Sonic
barrier protecting you from
I like
people's
that
opinions.
Analogy. Yeah.
Well, you could always just play to each other.
Yeah.
You'd be like, it's just us tonight.
That's
guys.
What I do. I mean, I've been thinking about this lately because, I mean, I talk about this a lot, but I, for years, I mean, literally over 10 years, every show I played glasses, sunglasses on stage in a bar. I put on sunglasses and play, because I'm not a singer, I just play bass, right? So I'm just in the back with my sunglasses on. But that's what I do on stage. I forget that there's an audience.
Do you think your glasses make you funnier?
Oh, yeah.
Man. I'm asking for a reason.
Yeah.
This is
like
a setup.
I think I can get away with more.
Yeah.
Because I found out recently that I need glasses. I was having trouble driving at night.
Yeah.
So, and my partner noticed that I've been squinting at a lot of shit. Mm-hmm. And she's like, hey, you should go to the optometrist. So I went to the optometrist, and they like put me through a bunch of machines and shit.
And then the
dude was, he was like, better or worse? And I'm like, it's insane how much better that is.
Oh, yeah.
So I ordered some glasses, and they're probably being delivered today.
Oh, nice.
I was hoping I'd have them before I went on to the podcast.
Yeah.
But they might make me funnier.
You're like, hey, you never know. You want to try it out?
Yeah.
No, I think it'll be... It definitely gives you a different look, I think, as far as just add something to your look. And you could do things... You can get different styles of glasses and kind of use that.
Just think of how dramatic you can be.
Yeah.
Like, look, let me show you.
And you're a different fucking person. You look different. Like,
it is so weird.
You're like
how...
fucking Clark Kent.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, dude. I don't want to give everybody this sexy... This is like the
face
shield.
That's just for your wife.
Yeah, come on, dude. Yeah, dude.
No, it is wild how different people look with glasses and with, or if you only see someone with glasses and then as soon as you see them without glasses, you're like weirded out. Like,
damn, Nick is sexy. Yeah, I get that.
So it's, anyways, but
yeah, I always like the glasses look. I've been wanting glasses since I was like, Rivers Cuomo was like my hero growing up.
Look cool.
And I was like, man, I want some thick rim glasses. And then it like
I
a
too
monkey's
would
paw
like
wish.
Look just like Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
By now I'm going for the Drew Carey. But
and then, well, then, because he doesn't even wear glasses anymore, does he?
He does, yeah. No,
no, but I think forgot. The thing is, he stopped wearing them. He doesn't need them anymore, but he still wears them for that reason, because I think he...
That's how he's known.
People like him better with glasses.
That's true.
That, I think I remember whenever, because he had started hosting Price is Right, is that it? Yeah. And then he had glasses and he got laser surgery and so he stopped wearing them, but then he quickly got them back.
Certain politicians either that want to appear more smarter, intelligent.
Yeah, more smarter.
Well, I think it was Rick Perry or some fucking libertarian jack off was like, I have the glasses on now, so my policies would be better.
I mean, but there's something to it for sure. Yeah. So
send me a picture. I'll let you know if you look smarter.
I'll have them when I get back. I'll the first thing I'm going to do is send you a picture.
Yeah, I'll send it to Dave. We'll post it.
We'll insert it in the show.
We'll have a poll.
Yeah, you can, because you edit these, right?
Yeah,
we can put up a comparison photo.
Right here.
Nice.
Before and after.
Yeah,
there it is.
So that'll be fun. So let's see, what else we got?
Writing process. That was good, man. I love hearing about that.
Yeah, writing. I mean, it seems like writing, that stuff, like, definitely is similar between a lot of bands. I mean, it just happens kind of differently sometimes.
It feels like banging on pots.
Our problem
sometimes
is ending songs.
Yeah.
I'll write something, and then we'll get to kind of like the last bit of the song. Like, I want this to kind of be where it ends.
Yeah.
And then John and Blake won't
keep going.
Stop. And I'll kind of be like,
Yeah. Okay, now.
They're not paying attention to me at all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's tough.
I remember.
Tough thing, yeah.
No, but, that was a good time. I mean, I think everybody takes turns doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you're just like, I remember when we used to smoke cigarettes and we could smoke in the garage, smoke weed and drink a little bit of beer. Mm-hmm. But we'd hang out and smoke, and then I'd be like, I guess it's a smoke break, and I'd let them just go. Just, I guess, all right, man, y'all keep going, man. Don't plug your shit. Let's see what I can do with one hand.
Yeah. I don't know, but yeah, it's, I mean, that is something that I always think about with the difference between, and obviously when we were doing it, we didn't know shit, so we were just, and that was, but I think that there's a difference between the two types of, like, you know, practice and rehearsal, like, right? Like, practice, you're supposed to practice at your house by yourself or, you know, whatever, but, like, we would often practice at rehearsal, which is not what you should do.
We were learning how to be a
band,
too.
But, yeah, it's the whole thing. Yeah. But we also were fucking over there every 3 weeks, or 3 times a week, so.
And sometimes four.
It wasn't even, like, we were really young and didn't have shit else going on, so. Yeah. It was perfect.
I wish for that time.
But a lot of that, yeah, a lot of that was, like, a lot of us, we were getting really good in there, you know, because we were doing most of our practicing in there too. Mm-hmm. But it's yeah, I mean, I think that there is something, and it's not even that, I think that what you're talking about is different than that, but as far as like, you just don't know, you maybe they're just so into the zone they just want to keep going, which is fun, but you do have to find that balance.
I always have a hard time with getting a chorus, man. I can write verses all day long.
Yeah, the chorus.
But unless it's a refrain, I'll say the line at the end.
That's probably what you need is like a writing partner as far as songwriting in that way.
Yeah. I just recorded something I sent to Dave. Yeah. I was like, man, this is pretty sweet.
Oh, yeah.
But it's been a while since I've done that. Yeah. So how do you capture your ideas? Do you just like record on your phone? You just...
Simple.
I'm blessed with a pretty... Like, I retain... I have a little acoustic guitar that is actually my partner's little sister's guitar that I'm never getting back like to her, even though she keeps asking for it. Yeah. And I'm like, you're going to play some Taylor Swift that shit with this. You're not getting this back.
you don't need to play with it at all.
So I write almost exclusively on this dinky little Yamaha acoustic guitar. I'll write a riff that I like, and then I'll bring it to the practice space where all of my gear lives.
Yeah, okay.
And so I'll have all my pedals and my amp and stuff, and I'll modify it there.
Yeah.
And I kind of have the opposite problem. I'll write a banger chorus.
Yeah.
And I'll have some good lyrics for it, and then I'll have to write around that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, start with the chorus.
Want to make a trade?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Maybe you could. Because it's like, I guess with a writing partner for music, it's like you don't necessarily have to be in the same band.
Well, and the problem is, I got all these ideas each other, I never use, man.
Well, I need a writing partner for comedy.
Yeah. You guys could trade.
I need someone that I could riff with, like, comedically.
Because, you talk about that a lot, writing with Leo.
Yeah, I try writing with, I haven't had a chance, but I try to write with Leo, too. Because, I mean, anybody, really, because you get a different perspective.
But yeah, it's finding the time. Is
that's the beauty of the podcast. Like, if you have a podcast that you do with another comic, you're riffing all the time.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, there's something to this for sure, because we are rehearsing or kind of practicing speaking and trading ideas, and especially trying to be funny on the fly. I mean, that's...
Being articulate and clear is another one. I always feel like I mumble sometimes.
I talk too fast if I'm not thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I jumble my words up.
Yeah.
And that's like my Achilles heel to being a comedian that might maybe get shows one day.
Yeah.
Well, you find that was a problem on stage?
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah, if I'm nervous, especially.
If you kind of lose that control.
Do you feel that between songs when you're playing music?
We don't do banter.
You don't do banter?
No, okay. we play everything. We'll take a break and I'll say my thank yous and my obligatory, like, you know, whatever's
tip the bartender.
We like to machine gun those songs out one after the other.
Really, do you feel like it loses momentum if you give them time to think?
Some bands, I'm not gonna call anybody out because this is purely my opinion, man. Some bands will pause after every song to say something. And I don't like it when bands do that.
Yeah,
play a block of three songs.
And then
take a break. Yeah. I think that's what we kind of do that. And our singer Josh is great about. He's really good about being a speaker and, you know, being the front man on stage as far as being an. He makes jokes and, you know, tries to engage the audience as much as he can. He's not like great at it. I think he struggles with it, but he does a good job as far as. But it's like, but he does that. And we'll plan out our sets to where it's like, okay, these songs are going to go just what you said, like three back to back. And then we do take a few seconds and he'll say something.
Jokes are hard between songs because if you bomb a joke during a music show, like in between songs, you don't have another joke to say the word.
Right. But you have the music.
You have to play the next song fully knowing that no one liked that joke and maybe you offended somebody.
Right. I think that I've seen that a lot. I wouldn't even say with you, as far as that was your first ever stand-up comedy, really, was in between songs.
Oh, yeah. That was my favorite. I was the guy you
handled. Because he was really wanting to be a comedian.
I would rather be a joke than, like, someone giving me a fucking speech about what the song's about. But, like,
yeah, I guess that's true, because we didn't really
I would do both.
Sometimes.
Most of it was for the joke. I love joking on stage.
But that was the thing.
Yeah.
But I think that it's something about, like, yeah, you were, practicing, but you always did it. But I always didn't say, like, you had definitely had tons of jokes that did not land at all, and it's like, okay, well, that didn't work. Well,
that's what we do. It's like, you guys didn't like that, you're going to love this.
Yeah, it's like, you kind of use, like, well, this is what you're really here for.
I would prefer that.
I'm going to sing instead of talk.
I prefer that instead of someone being like, this song's about my poor mental health. I'm like, I know your mental health is poor. My mental health is poor. That's why I'm fucking here. Listening to your music.
Yeah, so no.
My mental health is good. I'd be listening to something fucking different.
We'd be home watching TV right now.
Yeah, so.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful way to say it. I know you have mental health.
But, no, it's something about it. It's fun. So, what else? Let's see. Do we want to talk about... We talked about writing process.
Favorite show? You want to do favorite show?
Favorite show? Like TV show?
Do you have any experiences that really stand out, like...
Performance-wise?
Over the past 10 years? Performing, like your favorite performance?
My favorite comedy show that I performed.
Yeah.
The best one I did was probably still my first one.
Yeah.
Great room, great energy. Mm-hmm. Every bit that I had prepared got laughs.
Nice.
I thought, I am so fucking good at this. This was the right decision.
You didn't bomb the first time. That's cool.
The decision to get into comedy. Mm-hmm. Good decision.
Right.
I'm going to go forward so good at this. And then I did my next show, mm-hmm. and it sucked.
So what was the second one? The first one was at Bricktown, right?
First one was at Bricktown Comedy Club.
Yeah.
I think my second show might have been at Kendall's or something like that.
Yeah, just an open
mic. Just a different open mic.
Mm-hmm. But tougher because it's...
Or, you know what? The second one actually might have been at Bricktown again because I didn't know there were different places I could go to do it.
Yeah. Which, you know...
I'm like, okay, I'm going to sign up for Bricktown again and get another show at Bricktown on their Wednesday nights or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was just the worst. I thought I was good at this.
But then,
you guys laughed at this last time.
Yeah, that could be the issue.
You don't like it this time? I did the same set.
Sometimes that could be the issue, though. It's like if maybe they did remember those jokes and you don't realize it was a lot of the same people too, who knows.
Different crowds think different shit is funny.
Right. Like, that's absolutely the case.
It's so hit and miss crowd wise with comedy. I didn't know that. Where music, like, I know I'm gonna do good.
Yeah.
I know these songs are good. I know the people that are coming out to this are coming out to this because they like hardcore.
Yeah, they're gonna vibe with your stuff for sure.
People coming out to a Tuesday night, mostly local comedian show, comedy show. They don't know what they're in for.
They're looking for you to die.
They don't know what their tastes are.
For sure, that's true.
You don't know what they think is funny. Like what I think is funny could be completely offensive to them.
Right.
In some way. Or not offensive enough. Like,
that's true.
It's so hard to gauge that. So you have to be able to roll with the punches as a new comedian or even a seasoned comedian.
Yeah,
you have to know how to bomb.
That's probably one of the biggest differences I see is in music and comedy is like I was saying earlier, it's like for music, I do better when I don't pay attention to the audience at all. And like you can't do that with comedy, not really. Sometimes maybe if you just, I don't know, like you said, I think with your first set, right, you were saying it was so prepared that you had it down to where it's like, if you could do that, just turn, you could write a 5-minute monologue that's really funny and hits probably almost every time, if you really work a lot, really hard on that. But I think that that's really hard to do, and it definitely doesn't get a hit all the time because some people. But it depends on what it is, too.
Yeah.
But like, my best and worst comedy shows, way more interesting to talk about. Because my best shows as a band,
yeah,
they're good just, because there was a lot of people there and the energy really was right.
There's nothing
there's
else.
There's not a lot to it.
Mm-hmm. Nothing like, interesting.
A lot of kids came out. People bought shirts. People moshed. It was fun.
I did like that first show you played in that field. That was a cool story anyway. So it's like, DIY shows stuff like that is like... Yeah. Interesting.
I live for the DIY shows. I hate playing at bars.
Yeah.
That was our first show. It was on the back of a flatbed truck.
Yeah. That was, a little outdoor...
most fun we had.
Kind of random thing, but somebody gave us the opportunity, and that was cool.
Out in Guthrie.
Yeah.
And
Guthrie, wow.
Backwoods of Guthrie.
Yeah. It was like in the middle of the afternoon. There was like... I mean, a bunch of people of like our family came to check us out. So it wasn't like... It wasn't a terrible...
Well, we were one of the first, too.
But yeah, it wasn't
once
like...
Once it got kicked off.
Later in the evening, they had probably a lot more people out there.
After everybody got off work.
But it was a great experience for us, because that was our first time ever really playing a place. So.
It was a black flatbed.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And like, I'm white as hell.
Yeah. So I got burned,
man.
For sure. I remember that.
He had his sunglasses on, and he had that little ring.
Pigment deficient.
Right. So let's see. So we could ask you what your worst bomb is, but I guess that's always the question we have for comedians. I don't know if you have any interesting stories there.
I did one at Bricktown where it was like maybe 10 people there and five of them were comics.
Yeah, that's usually
and the other comics that were there to do Bricktown that night were outside.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this dude, you might have been there, with his partner, wife, girlfriend, whatever, belligerently drunk. He was outside before the show started trying to get everyone to perform at his like, I guess like he had a steak in like a dispo or something like that, like a weed dispensary.
Yeah.
And he was trying to set up the show in the parking lot, and he was trying to get comics to come out to it, but everyone can kind of tell he was drunk and didn't know anything about fucking comedy. I guess the comedian before him said something that upset him, and on top of that, the bar had cut him off. So he decided to make his displeasure known during my set. And he was like one fifth of the audience. And he got up and left. And he was like, fuck this shit. I'm out of here. I'm just letting you guys know that the bartender's racist. She cut me off because of this or that. And that dude said something about Mexican people.
What the fuck? Just calling out everyone in the room.
I'm gonna pull that. I'm not gonna do this dude justice, and I want everyone to know why he was upset and the reason that he was upset. I'm not.
So yeah.
I put up a reel about it. I was lucky enough to have been recording. So here's this dude. So he said, "Dude, y'all are racist as fuck. The bar cut me off. I'm out of here."
Dude, that was the best way to handle that. Yeah. What do you do for a living?
Wait, don't leave.
You're the only one.
There's no one else here that I can.
I asked everybody else out in the parking lot.
You're the audience, and you've laughed.
That was a great way to handle that. Honestly, man.
I wasn't even the person that upset you.
I think I remember that night because I laughed my ass off.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
When he came outside,
that's a good. I mean, that's a good bomb story for sure.
Yeah.
So you mostly do Bricktown, dude, and you said you do
Bricktown.
JJ's.
I like to go to JJ's, even though it's mostly just comics out there.
It's just fun.
It's getting better. Man.
It's getting better. I haven't been. It's been like a year, dude. So.
Like people come towards the middle. So if you sign up between 7 and like 18, you get people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was gonna come out this week, and it got canceled.
I actually
have new material to try for once in the last year that I've been focusing on music.
Well, they got the secret over.
I should try this material out. I'm going to be at Bricktown this Tuesday.
Oh, are you?
Okay. Nice.
So I have material to try out that I wanted to try out at J&J's or JJ's.
Before you went to Breakdown.
Before I went to Breakdown to see if is this going to work?
That's a good idea. I never thought about JJ's as like a kind of a, you know, because we always talk about how bad it is for, you know, trying to get laughs, but it's a good place to just try something to, if it's brand new and you don't even know. And before you take it to someplace you really want, you know, it's a good little testing ground.
Yeah, it's a good place to run some stuff.
That's a good point, because you want your Bricktown shows
right, a little bit better.
To go a little better than, like, your Kendalls or your JJ's or
whatever, smaller
your
ones.
Grand Royale shows or whatever.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I like that. Because there's another open mic also on Tuesdays that I like going to at Sailor in the Dock. Have you heard of this place on Sheridan? It's a new little building, little event space, really, but they have a lot of
things. It came up in the last 12 months, I've missed it, because I've been solely focusing on music and not comedy.
But there's, comedy open mic. They do music, too, but it's a smaller open mic, but also on Tuesday, so it's a lot. But a lot of comics will do both, if they'll go to...
Because I still need to, add that one to the list. I still need to hit... I've not been to the OK Culture one.
Yeah.
Monday. I live way closer to Norman now, so Othello's is easier for me, because when I was going to Othello's, I lived in Edmond.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That was a hell of a drive. And then I got priced out of being able to live in Edmond and had to move to the south side. So.
Well, you're almost there.
Yeah. That's good.
Well, they have this new one I'm going to Sunday. It's called The Secret. I think it's ran by Curtis Newsom. Over
that's around 36 right over here.
By the On Cue on 36th of May.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's I think it's like a LGBTQ bar too.
Yeah, so, that's what it is.
I'll fit right in.
And then they'll have Sunday and then Monday, Kilo. Like, I'm hitting it hard this week, so I'm gonna try to do a lot of them. And we got like one basketball game on Friday, but we got a show. But that one's been really you know, Kilo. And then Fairweather, is that happening still?
No. It might come back, but maybe not currently. Yeah. But there's a lot of opportunities.
OKC Improv has a new one.
Let's say there's one. Oh, because they just started one. Isn't Matt Rainey doing one?
That's OKC Improv. Yeah. And that's an acapella mic. He said,
Mike.
It looks like they've got really good crowds.
It's just open.
I didn't hear about that. And they have good crowds. But it's at the Improv, so you know why you're going there.
Yeah. But anyway,
if you're going to the Improv, you're going there for a reason.
Yeah, I'm going to try to hit that one this week, too.
But yeah, there's a lot of opportunities for that. So
let's go make the rounds,
man. We talk about it all the time.
Yeah, dude.
So it'll be exciting. You getting back into that. Record and then do one last segment. What else? We've got final questions.
Where can people see your work?
Yeah.
What do you got coming up?
Any shows you want to shout out or any...
Yeah.
In comedy or music.
I'll be at Bricktown Comedy Club this Tuesday, February the 6th, to try out some new material. If you want to see what I'm doing as I venture back into the comedy space. Jawline is going on tour with Tar Creek, another local hardcore band. It's a very short tour. We're doing four shows. April the 18th will be at 89th Street here in Oklahoma City. Then we are going down to Lubbock, Texas. That is to be determined what venue we're playing at. We're still trying to sort that out. After that, we're going to the Smoke and Slam Fest in Corpus Christi. To play with a bunch of other hardcore bands. That is also lineup TBD. They have not posted a flyer for that yet. And then we're finishing up at Nomads Trailside in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Nice. So that'll be a nice little tour, but it's really kind of close. But I mean, Corpus Christi, but that's kind of that big festival is kind of what it's all built around, right? So that was like probably the main thing you guys were going to do, and you just add some shows.
Oh, and we'll also, March 1st, we're going to be in Dallas, Fort Worth, Haltom City, to be more specific, Haltom Theater, to play a... not like a fest, but kind of a big lineup of some really cool hardcore bands.
Y'all are busy. That's good. You got a line year already kicking off the year strong.
And then March 8th is our only other local show coming up at a place called The Venue in Oklahoma City. That is with a band called It All Happened in July. our buddies in a band called False Idol. And then a band we met in St. Louis, Missouri, that we were really impressed by, called The Disappeared, who just released an LP that is
Yeah. Sweet. That'll be good. That's March 8th here. Yeah. You said the venue. Is that a new place?
Fairly. They've been doing shows for the past maybe half a year that mm-hmm. I've known of.
I may have seen it, but I'm not too familiar. But yeah, that's cool. And that's kind of more of that underground or stuff there, too.
It's attached to this dispo.
Yeah.
But it's not part of the dispo. Mm-hmm. They just share a building. Yeah. And they have, like, an arcade.
Nice.
And snacks and stuff, and then, like, a showroom.
Cool. That sounds fun.
A great place to maybe do a comedy mic.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, you should check that out.
The venue.
Yeah. So, okay.
I'll send you a link.
Nice. Okay, so what else? Last question. I guess you always like to ask this, but this might be, I don't know if you have an answer or what, but like as far as the challenge that you see for musicians specifically, but maybe comedians or any performers, but what challenge do you think people run into that's, you think, prevalent between, you know, for everyone, that the biggest challenge that you see, and what do you do to ever try to overcome it, and what can other people do, or particularly like younger people that want to get into performing?
A lot of what I hear people tell me mm-hmm. that prevents them from getting into performing either comedy or music is getting booked.
Right.
And the answer to that, or the solution, is to go to shows.
Yeah.
Go to comedy shows.
Around it.
Go to hardcore shows. Mm-hmm. Interact with those communities. Mm-hmm. Comedy, it's a little bit easier because you can sign up
for an
open mic and you can learn the craft. Mm-hmm. Music, you have to have a band.
Yeah.
And that band has to have a drummer.
which is, and that stops most bands
difficult
from ever.
To find one that's available because they're all in 10 bands.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you have to write music. And put on a demo, and then go to shows and meet some other musicians and introduce yourself and say, hey, here's my demo. Mm-hmm. Can you help me get some shows?
Try or something, huh?
That's how you do that. And shows are happening. Mm-hmm. You just gotta find them.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the
Instagram's
hard
the best way.
Yeah, I
found. Yeah.
That's how do you go about finding new shows?
Yeah.
Go onto Instagram. Search hashtags if you're not already familiar with the scene, if you don't already know kind of where the venues are.
Yeah.
Also follow the venues, follow local bands like Jawline or our buddies in False Idol or Tar Creek. And through that the algorithm will recommend you other local bands.
You'll
and
find it for sure.
They will post flyers of shows that they're playing. And then you go to those shows and you meet those bands and you meet those people and then you have an avenue for that.
Right. Yeah. That's something I always struggle with, finding shows specifically in music, and I think that's a bigger problem with the scene and kind of people's maybe mentalities, or I think maybe just having a resource for it, but like there's not like a central place to go to find everything that's going, not even everything, but a list of anything that's going on, like, doesn't exist anymore. Like, the Gazette was around for years and years, and not, they're gone. So it's like, what do you, you know, that's where I would go for forever to find out what's going on.
The closest thing is, like, Facebook events.
Yeah, but the problem with Facebook is people are moving to Instagram, and Instagram doesn't have a good system for shows yet, you know.
Yeah, you have to
really
see somebody's flyer get posted. You don't have, like,
that's what's been my thing. It's like, I need to start saving that stuff, and there's not a good way to save it. I mean, there is, but I don't know. It's just, maybe I just need to get
the way Instagram
that
works. It's hard to have an event page.
Right. That's the problem. So, I don't know, but that's something that I think we need somebody, you know, and obviously it's a lot of work, so that's why nobody does it, but you know, I would like to see more people try to curate things, lists and things. There are some like Instagram accounts that do specifically like punk. I think there's a punk account, like an Instagram
account, like,
that just posts punk shows.
Yeah, they aggregate
right and just reshare stuff, and it's all they do. Yeah. I think there is stuff
like
that.
Like you mentioned earlier, Circle of Media will do the release roundup every month.
Yeah, that's great for the releases. Yeah. That's like invaluable, I think, for what they're doing, which is with that stuff. Because it's a lot of work putting together those playlists and everything. and you know, Weirder, Michael Goma Weirder used to be really good about weekly shows, and they kind of stopped doing that, but hopefully they'll pick it back up. So that's another thing I would always, what, you know, every Thursday or Friday you'd look at, find the Oklahoma Weirder recommendation shows.
Yeah.
And so that's,
I remember they recommended us once or yeah. twice, and like I haven't noticed.
Yeah, I guess he recently. Stopped doing it recently, but maybe it's for the holidays. I seem to have noticed it dropped off, but I don't know.
You know what, Mike, I miss the most?
Yeah.
The Mondo Monday Pony Boy Mike.
Yeah, I heard about
I didn't know
that.
They had that.
Because they had it was a big, it was like an all day thing. It was like starting at like in the like later afternoon. Mm-hmm. They had anime,
okay.
And then they would show a movie and have a discussion, and then they would have open mic comedy after that.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. I've heard about that.
And then
that,
the open
yeah.
mic comedy, open mics, hosting open mics is a labor of love, mm-hmm. and eventually they go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No matter what, eventually unless, that mic yeah. will eventually die, unless you're Othello's or Bricktown.
Right. Yeah. Like I said, unless somebody keeps it going.
Keeps
that's
going.
What James Nimitz told us on his episode about. He, you know, knew the guys that started Othello's way back in the day, and then they stopped, and then somebody else took it over, and that's the reason why it's been going.
Yeah. Well, Leo took over JJ's,
yeah.
You know,
so.
And
but yeah, that's what we
did. Who did JJ's before Leo? Because I
Justin
was,
Keithley.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Because when I was introduced to JJ's, it was of the Leo era. So
yeah, same. Yeah, and Leo was such like a nice, approachable guy too.
Yeah, like, I'm, oh, listen, I'm so glad because yeah. if yeah. I get into trouble. Because yeah. something I said on this podcast, I have to do legal work for me mm-hmm. as far as if I need like a defamation lawyer or something.
Yeah. Yeah, he can point you in the right direction. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I don't want him to. I want him.
Yeah.
I want yeah. Leo to be my representation. Leo, if you listen to this,
please
name your price.
All right. Well, that's. I think that's really all we got. I don't know, Nick. Do you have any last minute things that you wanted to ask or bring up? I guess there was one question I meant to ask, but where's the name come from, Jawline?
I just thought of it one
yeah,
day. Like one day, I want to start a band, and I want a cool
yeah.
one-word name
yeah.
that's easy to remember and mm-hmm. stands out.
I think that's the reason, like I said, whenever you said that you were so fairly new band, that's like, I mean, I think that for whatever reason that name is stuck in my head and to where it seems like it's been around a lot longer than
that's working.
You guys have. So yeah, because mm-hmm. it's very, you know, something about it is like evocative or like, you know, mental imagery. I don't know why. It's just an interesting,
it's just, it's aggressive
word. Yeah, but it's something weird
and
kind of cool.
Hits.
Yeah, I like it. So yeah, I was just curious. I want to start asking that regularly to bands. That's always an interesting thing, usually.
You gotta ask it to comedians, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Think of your name. Well, give it to me. this is named this,
yeah, so,
unfortunately.
Yeah, I like that. But yeah, I guess... Do you have anything else?
Not really. No.
I think that's it. It's all right. We did it.
Good job.
Thank
guys.
You for the cassette.
Yeah, yeah, let me know what you think, man. Let me know what you think.
Awesome.
I'll tell
yeah.
Chuck.
For sure.
For sure. I have like a thing where I it's like a wall mounted cassette organizer that I bought from Beloved Bones, which is the store mm-hmm. attached to the sanctuary.
Nice.
So this will just slot right
yeah,
in there.
Perfect.
Nice, man.
All right. Well, thanks, AB, for
yeah,
being
thanks,
on the
bud.
Show.
Oh, thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely.
We'll, I guess we gotta do our upcoming events.
Yeah.
You wanna take a quick break or
yeah, let's take a.
Them?
You wanna run through it real quick? We can run through it.
Yeah, because. The upcoming events for Friday, February. These are all Friday, February 9th, which
yeah.
is a problem for me. Don't want to go to all of them.
Yeah.
But the first one we'll shout out, throw it over to Nick.
Hey, guys, what's going on? I'm Nick Campbell. I'm going to be hosting Put a Cork in It comedy show. It is going to be the one you want to come to see.
Okay,
guys,
these.
Out of all this, the list of everything
hey, but this
we
is
have
earlier,
here.
So I'm going to be able to do two
yeah.
of them.
You're going to, yeah, I would
don't
love...
listen to him. I'm Nick Campbell. I'm hosting.
And this is what we were talking about earlier about identity theft. Guys, it doesn't get better.
That's why he was talking about glasses earlier.
VPNs don't save you.
I'm Nick Campbell. If anything said on this podcast has upset you, direct your complaints to Nick Campbell on Instagram.
Yeah, it's going to be nickcampbellcomedy.com.
Yeah.
He's like, just go there.
Bring it, dude. Sign up for the mailing list. Let me know how you feel. But yeah, Put a Cork in It comedy show that's going to be Friday, February 9th, 6:30 to 9:30. Join us for an unforgettable night of laughter at the heart of downtown Oklahoma City. Put a Cork in It Winery is where the magic happens and where turning your Friday into a chuckle-infused comedy extravaganza. ChatGPT wrote that.
Wow.
Yeah, it is pretty good. Featuring headliner extraordinaire Lenny Van Horn. He's actually open for John Lovitz as well as Brad Upton. So this is like, it's a big get. Dude, $5 show. You know what I'm saying? You're getting it for, it could have been $35. You know what I'm saying? So it's only $5 to see the show. Then the next, we got Jeremy Link. He's a comedian and producer of shows across the Midwest. And then we've got a guest spot, Taylor Dunn, a veteran and hilarious road comic. He actually does stuff in LA and he's decided to do this. And we have a very special guest, Vanna Hightower, right? Known for her charm and warm wit. And then it's going to be me as the host. All right, and then it's great. Like I said, it's only $5. Doors open at 5:30. Show starts at 6:30. You'll see me and Liz there. It's gonna be a great time.
I was gonna say you have four people on this show.
Yeah, we. So what I did is I noticed that after 30 minutes, people stop paying attention. They start looking for the like.
Yeah,
I think
something
they just get
else.
Distracted.
Yeah, so you're kind of splitting up the time, I guess.
And so what we did is I went from 40 to 30 for the headliner.
Okay.
And then I went 20 for the feature, 10. For is usually guest. For the guest, and then we got the special guest, which is Vanna, so it'll be another 10 for her.
Okay.
And then I'll do 5 to 7 up top.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so, I was curious about that. I saw that lineup.
Yeah. I mean, it's which, a great price for what you're getting.
Yeah, for sure. Four comics. That's always a great night. I always have a good time. Like I said, I'll definitely be out here for this because I can do this, and even if I have to leave, I probably won't have to leave early because it usually ends fairly, I mean, it's never too late when we get out.
Well,
so.
And be sure to get tickets because they're running out. Mm-hmm. Like, I've already got most of the, I mean, a little over half sold.
Yeah, last month was sold out. So
it's pretty, it sold out.
Yeah, so
it's really easy to make $5 on the fly, so you have no excuse.
It'll be a fun show. So check that out Friday, especially downtown. Put a cork in it. Great wine and food.
Do you want to do one?
Of course, charcuterie.
You want to do an announcement?
Yeah, pineapple willows.
Yeah, do you know Pineapple Willows?
Pineapple, okay, let me
They're friends of mine. Dante Frame is in that band, but they're doing a show at Point A Gallery. I don't know.
Pineapple Willows at Point A Gallery, Friday, February 9th at 8 p.m. with special guest Chris Allen Cox. 2124 Northwest 39th Street, Oklahoma City. $10, all ages.
dude. Nicely done.
Yeah, it's at Point A Gallery. I like that venue a lot. Like I said, I gotta go to this because my friend Dante is playing, also plays in Soul and Cable. He's the lead guitar player for that band. But this band, he's kind of a shoegaze kind of type, emo type, more like, I don't know.
It's shoegazy, like ambient, a lot of fuzz, a lot of delay.
Yeah, a lot of big sound, like big, he loves reverb. But it's kind of more pop. I mean, he loves the Beatles, so a lot of that kind of elements infused, I would say, like those types of pop elements. But
I was going to say, like My Bloody Valentine shoegaze, or like slow dive shoegaze.
I mean, he doesn't even like the term shoegaze, I think, because it's not really what he's trying to do. But it has a lot of those elements. So.
I like it. I have way more pedals than I do too.
But it's great. So, and Chris Allen Cox, he's more of a, he's got that Irish punk vibe. You know what I mean? Like
Flying Molly.
Yeah, that's kind of his stuff. But he's a solo artist right now. He just sings and plays guitar, but he's had bands in the past. Check them out. It'll be a fun show at Point A Gallery. And that's it for the events, and that's it for the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. Hey, thanks. Just to let you know, I have a website, nickcampbellcomedy.com. If you sign up on the mailing list, mm-hmm. you can get information about upcoming shows as mm-hmm. well as promos and merch discounts. We're going to start doing merch. So me and David worked on a logo. Yep. We got something good coming down the pike. We're going to do T-shirts. And like I said, also, you're going to get promos for any shows that we produce. Yeah. So right now,
maybe
put
you
a cork
do
in
some,
it.
Like,
and Lively.
Pre-sale tickets or something.
Yeah.
Advanced.
But this way, if you sign up for the mailing list, my plan is to give you half off on the next ticket.
Right,
so kind of give you an idea of kind of what we're doing. That way, it gives people... I have a lot of people that ask me about mm-hmm. going to shows. Now, if they truly want to go.
Yeah, sign up for the mailing list.
But this is the best
right
way to
your,
find out.
Get it right in your inbox without any work.
Yeah, get in that inbox.
That was the original DMs.
Yeah, that's right.
Also, shout out to my new website, onlyfans.com/filmingthroughnickcampbellswindow secretly.
It's a good one. Yeah. It's a good one. I'm surprised every time.
All
but thanks, guys. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Send us some mail. Say what's up.
Gmail, rhythmandwit@gmail.com.
Love you guys. Bye.
All right.
Dude, that was fun.
That was awesome.
Nicely done.
Hey, Paris here.